Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those of you who, like me, have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed, that they are the problem. Our mission, therefore, is to know who and who is working against us, how they're doing so, why they're doing so. Because exposing and condemning their schemes isn't hateful, even when they're political, even when they're religious, even when they're patriotic, even when they involve the military. It's actually caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to continue our review of Paul's letter to the Galatians, comparing it to what Yahweh and Yahusha had to say to demonstrate conclusively that its author was a fraud. Our phone number, if you would like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. There is a big brouhaha in Washington based upon a presentation by the Democrats that who are playing the role of Chicken Little and saying, climate change, climate change. They want their constituents and the rest of the world to cower in fear, thinking that it is the dastardly industrialists, it is those conservative Republicans that are smoking their cigars and driving their SUVs, encouraging black suit to spew out of the chimneys of their factories, all the while creating a warmer world that is killing innocent women and children. Yes, the tornadoes that ravaged the Midwest, the hurricanes that pounded the Philippines. All of this is because of, well, we can't say global warming, but we'll say climate change. And that it's now such a serious problem that lives are being lost by climate change. Well, fact is, climate is changing. Climate has changed on this planet for probably the better part of 3 billion years. It will continue to change. And while it is presently cooling, it is in a warming period. And Yahweh warned us that it was going to get a lot hotter around here. Specific, that the last years on this planet are going to be scorchers. Now the fact is, and it's irrefutable, that the Earth has a history of going through 600-year cycles, and that it has gone through these 600-year cycles for as long as there has been vegetation on the planet. Prior to that time, it's hard to tell. But for the billions of years that there has been vegetation on this planet, scientists are able and have examined the sediments of that vegetation to affirm that the Earth, for at least 1 billion years, has undergone a series of climate cycles. They can be as short as 300 years. They can be as long as 700 years. They average around 600 years. And during the 600-year cycles, the Earth will cool, and then it will warm. And now there are blips over these 600-year cycles, where during a warming period you'll get a decade or so of cooling, and during a cooling period you'll get a few decades of warming. But overall, the trend is to have the Earth cool a degree or so over the course of the halfway mark of a period, and then begin to reach equilibrium over the next 300 years, only to cool for 300 years and reach its coolest point and then move back to equilibrium over 300 years. We started a warming period right around 1875, maybe as early as 1850. So, you know, we're around 150 years into a warming period. That explains why the glaciers, which were first photographed right around that time, around 1850, which was the end of a cooling period, were larger than they are now. So old Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, which is based primarily on the pictures of glaciers, he deceived his readers when he used that as a criterion, because all he was demonstrating is, in fact, that we have a long and proven history of climate cycles. And nothing mankind can do, is doing, has done, is going to affect those cycles to any significant degree. That's the simple truth. Every scientist that pontificates otherwise knows the truth. They're just like the Muslim guy who knew that the statements that he cited were actually adverse to his position when read in their entirety and considered in context. But he makes a living lying, so he lied. It's the same thing with virtually every scientist that pounds his chest on climate change. And by the way, they've changed to climate change from global warming, although they'll always work in global warming into the discussion, because no one can argue with climate change. Climate changes. And the Earth is not currently warming. We've gone through a period now of about 16 years where we have finally developed and deployed very sophisticated, accurate, and well-dispersed temperature recording probes that feed satellite data in real time. And so for the first time, beginning about 15 to 20 years ago, we developed the capacity to actually tell if the Earth's temperature in aggregate was changing. And what we found is that it is. But it's not warming, it's cooling. As evidence of this, NASA about 15 years ago predicted that the polar ice cap would retreat to the extent that by last summer, the summer of 2013, there would finally be a Northwest Passage, that ships would be able to sail around the northern landmass of Canada and Alaska from Europe to Asia. Not only didn't it happen, the polar ice caps retreated further last winter than any time in recorded history. Rather than experiencing a warming period, Lake Superior froze solid, something that hadn't happened with exception of 1 year in the last 100. The Earth is actually cooling. A number of reasons for that. There is the possibility that man is actually having some influence on the Earth's temperatures, although it's minor. You see, while carbon can create a greenhouse effect, man's pollution, and pollution is from a lot of different causes, just our constant maneuvering, throws particulates into the atmosphere, and it has a reflective effect, reflecting the sun's light away. And so everything from agriculture to our constant moving about to carbon has an offsetting effect, one creating cooling through reflection, the other creating warming through carbon, or in the case of asphalt roads, actually radiating heat. But the issue has never been with scientists nor the environmentalists with coming up with a solution to what they claim is man's contribution. No one wants to tell you that man's contribution to warming, which is not actually occurring at the moment, but will again, is fairly insignificant. Maybe at most, if we enter and when we enter a warming period again, you know, it may be 5%. And so if you were to eliminate that, you'd still have 95% of the warming trend. They don't want you to know that. They want the industrialists. They want the conservatives who drive their big cars to be blamed. But the fact is, they have no interest in a solution. You know, if carbon, reducing carbon, is the answer, then they would be in favor of drilling gas wells. They're not. They're opposed to them. They'd be in favor of gas pipelines. They're not. They're opposed to them. They'd be hugely in favor of nuclear energy generation. They're steadfastly opposed to it. They'd be in favor of wind farms and solar farms. They're overwhelmingly opposed to both. What that means is that the environmentalists aren't trying to facilitate a solution. Even with electric cars and trucks, they know that they are more environmentally destructive than our gasoline engines. They have absolutely no interest in a solution. Their interest is in control. Their interest is in lining their own pockets. They've created a really profitable gig playing Chicken Little. And that gig puts them in a position that scientists don't very often find themselves in, embraced by politicians and part of the gravy train, at the top of the pecking order. Now, no one is promoting a real solution because there isn't one. We can't control the cycles that have caused these 600-year, on average, global warming and cooling trends. We have no influence over the sun. We have no influence on the tilt of the planet. We have no influence on the orbit of the Earth. We have absolutely no say about any of these things. And they are the major contributors. They are responsible for 95% of what we are experiencing. We'll be back in a moment. While climate change is real, it is irrelevant. It's irrelevant because the climate has always changed. It will continue to change. It isn't man's responsibility. This is all an outgrowth, of course, of socialist secular humanism, which wishes to control and thinks that man is the exhibit A, the most prominent life force in the universe. And so it must be man's causing, and therefore it must be man's solution. But yeah, we are simply a carbon-based life form orbiting this planet. And folks, if everyone in the world were to instantly hold their breath, they were to say, we're not going to eat meat anymore. We're not going to go for the protein. No, not going to do that. So we're not going to have any belching cows. And we were to figure out a way to eliminate all volcanoes. And we were all going to live like hunter-gatherers on the land because we were going to eliminate all transportation, which is the most of the carbon that is emitted. And we're not going to have any power plant other than the precious few the environmentalists have allowed us to have in terms of just nuclear power. Not going to have any other kind of power plant, so we're going to go off the grid. I mean, you're going to have to blow into one of those little children's pinwheels to generate enough power to run your cell phone. If we were to do everything, I mean shut down the world tomorrow, we would have perhaps a 1 or 2% effect on the temperature variation. That's just the reality of it. Now, the people who are promoting the control mechanisms, which are primarily wealth redistribution, they know that. But there's two things that several things that climate control does. One, it creates an enemy, somebody out there that is a foe that we need to unite to oppose, that we need to empower our leaders. We need to say that our leaders are looking out for our best interests, that we need to be willing to give them our resources, and we need to restrict our lifestyles and our freedoms to combat this foe. The war on terrorism is used like that. But so is the war on the environment. Exactly the same thing. And it's also global. So it's not just empowering local politicians. It empowers the world's elite. This is a way globally to control, which is what it's all about. Taking vast amounts of money, hundreds of billions of dollars, from the most productive nations and giving it to the least productive. It's all wealth redistribution. Because what you get is you get the masses of people being dependent, and they're dependent upon the manipulators who take money from one group and give it to another. That's what it's all about. And if you are bamboozled by them, shame on you. It's you've got no excuse. Everything I've shared with you is available. You can read any one of the environmental studies that have been published in the world's leading scientific journals that show absolute proof through tree rings and sediment samples that we're in a period of global warming and have been since the mid-19th century, and will continue to be in it for some time. Now, the fact is, we're currently in a period of global cooling. I do have a solution. And at the same time, I can resolve anyone's fixation on chemtrails. Yes, the solution to global cooling, which is what we're experiencing over the last 16 years, it has another benefit, too. It will rid the world of the threat of nuclear war. Yep, send all of our nukes to Jupiter, which is just really right at the edge of being a little dwarf star. Send all of our nukes to Jupiter, explode them. You turn Jupiter into a star, we've got the rotisserie effect. Global cooling's a thing of the past. You won't have to endure another winter like we did this past winter. Huh. And then think of the other benefit, all you chemtrail enthusiasts out there. Without the atmosphere being cold up there, there won't be any more chemtrails. You don't have to worry about them. You'll never see them. Out of sight, out of mind, problem solved. We'll speak about, facetiously, the other big problems facing humanity. Yes, the cell phone magnets and Islamic terrorism. When we return to Shattering This, I'm going to hold off on one of my solutions, which is the solution for cell phone electromagnetism, so that my patents that I filed on my solution can all be settled, and then I'll let you all in as investment partners on that solution. We may air it, however, the next time that commercial airs of the mom being too concerned about her children using a cell phone. But I do want to get to Islamic terrorism, since Islamic terrorism is really in the news. The president even talked about it this morning. You've got the abuse. Particularly with the rape and the enslavement of little girls over there in Nigeria. So I've got a guarantee that this solution will end 99.9% of the terrorist acts in the world, because they're all promoted by Muslim boys and young men who are doing so with the expectation of having perpetual sex with virgins in paradise. And as a byproduct of this solution, we'll also end the torment of little girls that are sexually mutilated by their parents in the name of Islam. That simple solution, you'll end immediately 99% of Islamic terrorism, and you will have no need to sexually mutilate little Muslim girls. castration. Muslim boy is born rather than mutilating the genitals of little girls, chop it right off. That way, we're going to have, it'll be an extreme form of circumcision. Lop it off. No more desire for the virgins in paradise. No way to deal with those little virgins in paradise. No incentive for Islamic terrorism. No reason to treat little girls as if they're sex objects and mutilating their genitals. Now, I'm just kidding, of course, but it would work. The President of the United States came out today, and he issued a somber warning because he is the great father figure for the world. He is the conscience of the world. He is the ultimate bastion of morality. Reuters says he issued a somber warning that the kidnapping of Nigerian girls and the sectarian conflicts worldwide were a sign that we had not extinguished man's darkest impulses. That's because we haven't extinguished Islam. Let me help you with that. Every one of the conflicts that exists because of Islam. Those girls were kidnapped because of Islam. He specifically listed the sectarian conflict that is taking place in Syria, where Shia and Sunni Muslims are killing each other. He also listed tribal conflicts. Now, tribal conflicts are also a derivative of Islam. Yep. Man's darkest impulses continue to rage unchecked because we have buffoons like the President of the United States that exonerates, lifts up, praises the primary motivation for these dark impulses, the religion of Islam. By the way, he knows it. He's not misled in this regard. He knows it. He's just being duplicitous. He's being hypocritical. I know that sounds surprising. In Nigeria, you see, Islam is not just responsible for kidnap. You know, kidnapping isn't just one of Muhammad's favorite pastimes and thus part of Sharia law. Muslims aren't just involved in ransom for kidnapped victims. That wasn't the only thing that Muhammad busied himself with. They aren't just involved in rape. It's not the only perverse behavior that the Quran encourages. You see, Muslims are mostly involved in killing civilians in terrorist acts. I'm sure that the Muslim man is working right now on his retort to take another couple of Quranic citations and trim them so that statements that say exactly the opposite of his point will be taken out of their context and deployed to fool the foolish. Well, today, and I guess it was yesterday in Nigeria, Boko Haram, a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organization associated directly with Islam, murdered 150 more people. Murdered them. Cold blood. Militants dressed in military uniforms, backed by armored personnel carriers, shouting, "Oh, CNN, you goofed. You know, just a week ago, you printed an article where you recognized that Akbar was a superlative, that it meant greater, but here, no, they're back to God is great," in quotes. They were shouting, "Allahu Akbar." It does not mean God. Allah is not the Arabic word for God. The Quran never uses Allah as the word for God, ever. And yet the Arabic word for God is found throughout the Quran. It's based on the Hebrew word for God, Il and Illah, the Arabic word for God. Allah is not the Arabic word for God. It's one of the names of the Islamic God. And it's Allah is greater, bigger, older. That's what Akbar means. It's a comparative term. It's a comparative superlative. You know, if you can't get the basics right, why do you write? If you can't write the right words, why write at all? Anyway, these militants, they were jihadists, good Muslims, backed by armored personnel carriers and shouting, Allah is greater, attacked a Gamboro Nagla, firing rocket-propelled grenades and tossing impoverished bombs into a crowded outdoor marketplace. Yeah, these weasels, these scumbags, this lowest form of life, these good Muslims. Yeah, they didn't go off and say, hey, Nigerian army, let's go toe-to-toe. Mano a mano. My assault rifle against your assault rifle. My rocket-propelled grenade against your rocket-propelled grenade. Let's go at it. Let's fight this out like men. No, they're not we. They're just weasels. So what do? They use their armored personnel carriers. They use their AK-47s. They use their rocket-propelled grenades. They use their improvised bombs full of shrapnel. And they go attack a marketplace filled with women and children. Oh, absolutely a model of morality right there. Courageous. Oh, yeah, boy. Don't you just love the heroism of the Islamic jihadist? Yes, indeed. Allah is greater. Look what he's inspiring. Allah is most great. Look at the carnage. Look at the women and children that we can kill. Aren't we special? Yeah, we're going to show you. We're going to show you whose God is really great. We're going to go and mutilate hundreds upon hundreds of little boys and girls and their mothers. Just to show you that our religion is better than yours. Where's the Muslim man? Where's your excuse to exonerate your religion from 1,400 years of barbaric carnage like this? You know, this is exactly what Muhammad did, by the way. Muhammad led and inspired 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. That's a lot of terrorist raids in 10 years. But nonetheless, all of them are detailed in the Islamic hadith. And in those 75 raids, he never once faced an army. Never once combated men who were equipped to fight even as police. His victims, 100% of the time, were civilians. Most of them unarmed. These Muslims from Boko Haram shouting, Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater. We're proving how disgusting their wannabe deity and religion is by following the example of their lone prophet, Muhammad, who did exactly the same thing 75 times. Now, Muhammad might have been a bit more weaselly because he didn't just go and throw bombs, because frankly, he didn't have bombs. He would have had he had them, but he didn't have them. He didn't fire AK-47s. If he had them, I'm sure he would have used them. But his goal, Muhammad's goal, wasn't to murder and mutilate the women and children. No, he wanted to murder and mutilate the men. He wanted to sell the children into slavery. And it's really hard just to get a good price for a slave when they're missing hands and feet, when they're blind because you've savaged them this way. And, you know, in a woman that's lying there dead, she's not of great interest to rape. Now, I know that Muslims do have sex with the deceased. But, you know, that's not the Islamic way, because it's all about conquest. It's all about rape. It's all about making certain that the person that you're imposing your will upon can't resist you. It's all about the conquest, which is why there are virgins in paradise. Be back in a moment. There was an article a few days ago on what's behind Boko Haram. You see, the leader of Boko Haram is fairly elusive, Abu Akbar Shiku. We talked about his name and what it represents and what it tells you about Islam. Abu Bakr was the financier of Islam. Had it not been for Abu Bakr, Islam wouldn't exist today. He's the one that decided, you know, there's money to be made. And he made a fortune financing Muhammad. And he endeared himself to Muhammad by giving his six-year-old daughter to Muhammad as a sex toy. That is Abu Bakr. That's what this man's name means. Anyway, so everyone is trying to say, who is this man? Because they just want to say he's a good Muslim. He happens to be an Islamic cleric, is who he is. So, somebody sent me the article and said, you know, what is behind Boko Haram? So my first guess was, must be the Baptist. You know those Baptists. I mean, they're against some of the same things. They're against drinking, right? They're against dancing, right? They're religious fundamentalists. I suspect that Boko Haram is secretly a Baptist group. Or could be Girl Scouts. Not them, maybe the Tea Party. What do you think about environmentalists being behind Boko Haram? Yeah, and if you eliminate enough people, then the environment can support the people that are left. There's less pollution. Could be environmentalists. Maybe they're smoking chemtrails. Maybe it's the chemtrails that have poisoned them. Nah, probably not. Could just be the Quran and Hadith, the example of Muhammad. In fact, they could actually be telling us the truth, that they are good Muslims and that they read the Quran and Hadith and that they're modeling their lives after Muhammad and following Allah's orders. I know it's a stretch, but sure seems like that's the most likely candidate to me. Well, there's a CNN anchor, Isha Shesay, that evidently provided some insights for us. They said he is the face of terror. Oh, come on. Terror has existed for as long as we know of man existing. Terror is the weaselly way out. Terror is what the strong man does to the weak man. Terror is what the weak do to the strong. Now, what do I mean? If you deploy terror as a tactic and you go after unarmed and defenseless civilians with your weapons, whatever they may be, then you are a weak individual. Now, you're just scum. And that's what I mean by it's a tactic of weak individuals. But it's also a tactic of that is deployed by those who know that they haven't the capacity to fight. An example. In World War II, America knew that that the American people were sometime going to give up on the recognize that the cost of pursuing revenge against the Japanese for killing 3,000 Americans at Pearl Harbor, when that cost was exceeding 300,000, when we had sacrificed 1,000 men for every one they killed, and that we had at that point killed 1,000 of them for every one that they killed of our troops, that after a while, continuing to lose 25,000 men in a battle was going to get worrisome. And so they needed a way to get the Japanese to surrender without fighting it out as we had across the Pacific. And so the solution was to terrorize them, was to have our airplanes drop incendiary bombs, fire bombs on Japanese cities, roasting old men, women, and children alive. Lincoln realized that the North was reaching a point where they were saying, we've lost 300,000 or 400,000 men promoting your war. Enough already. Now, this is just not ever going to end. And so Lincoln decided, I've got a strategy. We'll terrorize them into submission. We can't beat them on the battlefield without sacrificing too many of our own. So what we'll do is we'll use a scorched earth policy, and we'll have Sherman march to the sea, destroying the South's will to fight. It's a common tactic.